Hello, everyone. So yeah, my name is Rodrigo Bruno. Today I'm going to talk about this runtime object lifetime profiler that's going to help applications that are latency sensitive to run on top of OpenJDK, Hotspot JVM. So this is a collaboration, or this is joint work with some great guys. We have Duarte, José, Luis, and Paul Ferreira. We did this work while at NHKD. So just to set up the context, I just want to say that in the context of this work, we assume that a big data application is something that runs on top of a big data platform, and there are many examples of this thing. We have Cassandra, Hadoop, Spark, MongoDB, and many others. And these platforms, they rely on or execute on top of a managed runtime, and there you can have Java Virtual Machine, you have CLR, you have Python, you have many other types of runtimes. And in particular, we are interested in latency-sensitive applications, and this can be banking applications or services, this can be context-aware ad services, this can be games, anything that requires a low pause time for the application. Now, usually these applications will have an SLA, so this is kind of a guarantee that they want to have that the application is not going to stall for more than a couple of milliseconds, and these SLAs can be very easily compromised, for example, if your platform is getting a very low response time. So for example, if you do a request for a read and this read takes more than some time, this can violate your SLA. And this usually means that your application threads are being held by the managed runtime. There can be other reasons, but many, many times the reason is that your application threads are stuck because the runtime is doing something. And when we look into close detail into the managed runtimes, the usual suspect is garbage collection. So there has been large related work saying that and demonstrating that GC is a very good candidate for stalling your application threads for a long period of time. So before trying to show you why this probably happens, I'm just going to show how GC currently works, and this is going to help us to understand what happens in practice and why application threads are being stuck. So in OpenJDK and most production JVMs, you will have a generational GC, which is a GC that has two generations. It has a young generation and the old generation. The young generation is further divided into two spaces. You have the hidden space, which is where all objects are located, and you have the survivor space, which is used to hold objects until they are old enough. Now, assuming that we have an application that allocates objects, objects here are represented as these green circles, and inside each circle, you have the number of GC cycles that an object survived. The GC will kick in whenever the application allocates enough objects to fill up the hidden size. And it will trigger, and it will copy survivor objects to one of the survivor spaces, and this can go on, and then we use another survivor space, and then we fill up the hidden again, and then we eventually move objects to the old space. So this is more or less, obviously there is a lot of complexity hidden here, but this is more or less how a generational GC is, which is what you will get most of the times when you run on top of a Java Virtual Machine. Now, let's take a very simple example of a big data platform. So we have this method here, which is run task, and this method only executes four things. It allocates a piece of memory, it loads some data into this memory, processes it, and then it pushes the output to some data structure. Let's assume that we are running this with four threads, one for each core. So each task or each working set is going to use around 500 megabytes of memory. Let's assume that our hidden is at least 2 gigabytes so that we can fit all four working sets at the same time in the hidden space. And to make this more interesting, let's assume that tasks can take different amount of time to execute. For example, if you are using a different operator in the data. Now, let's see what happens when we execute this thing. This is a potential distribution of the tasks. So whenever thread one finishes task A, the hidden is full, so we need to trigger a GC because we need more memory to allocate a new working item. And as I told you before, since the hidden is full, the GC will kick in and we'll have to copy all the live working sets to another space. So this means that we're going to copy 1.5 gigabytes of data just to fulfill this GC. And if you continue executing this type of workload, you'll see that many tasks will be copied once, and even sometimes tasks are going to be copied twice. So at the end of this very small example, we copied around 4.5 gigabytes of data, which is fine. But if you consider that we are running on top of a DDR4 machine, which usually gives you around 20 gigabytes of memory bandwidth per second, So the GC pulse will take at least 150 milliseconds just to copy the data. So this is not even considering tracing the object graph. This is just to copy the data. It will take 150 milliseconds. Now, if you want to use a bigger machine with more threads and more memory, if we decide to scale this thing to, let's say, 8 threads, then your pulse is going to be at least 350 milliseconds. Again, if you try to scale this up to 16, this will lead to close to 1 second of pulse time. If you decide to plot these pulse times along the number of threads, you'll see that there is a linear increase in the pulse time that GC will take just to copy data. So please note that the x-axis is not linear, it's powers of 2. So this is why you have a linear increase in the pulse time. Now, this is because GC is currently bound to memory bandwidth. So in current commodity hardware, we see that the number of cores and size of memory is increasing very rapidly. And the memory bandwidth that you have to cope with this increase is very little. So if your application is dirtying memory very fast, the GC will not be able to have enough memory bandwidth to compact this memory and to keep up with the application speed. So the goal of this work is to reduce application pauses by reducing object copying. We want to stay away from object copying because you don't have enough memory bandwidth to keep up with low pause times. Now, obviously, there are other ways to try to go around this problem. You could say, okay, maybe 2 gigabytes is not enough or it's too much. But at the end of the day, you can try to increase, for example, the young generation size, but it's not going to solve the problem because eventually you will hit the pulse that you will need to get a GC, and the GC will produce exactly the same amount of pulse times. You can also try to reduce the working set size. Let's say I don't want 500 megabytes, I could use less. But this will put a lot of pressure potentially in your platform. For example, if you have millions and millions of working items, and if you reduce by one or two orders of magnitude the size of each working set, this will produce a lot more stress on your platform. You can also use a very popular technique, which is object pooling, which basically means I'm trying to reuse objects that are not needed anymore and try to avoid allocating new objects very often. If you try to do this, this will eventually get very complex, and you will see that you are ending up implementing GC in user space, which completely avoids the purpose of running on top of a Java virtual machine. You can also use off-heap memory. This is also a popular technique. Again, if you use this very intensively, you are going to end up implementing GC in user space. You can also use region-based or scope-based memory allocation. This will work for bag-of-task platforms, very simple, when you can actually verify that objects never escape the scope of allocation. But once you try to do this for example, databases or caches, objects are definitely going to escape the scope of allocation, and therefore you cannot use this technique. And finally, you can also use completely concurrent GCs. Right now we have three of these GCs in the market. But they currently give you a very high overhead in terms of throughput. I have some numbers in the presentation, but at least for ZGC, which is currently being developed by Oracle, this gives you for Cassandra 30% overhead of throughput. So the solution that we want is somewhere in the middle where we don't have to give up so much on the throughput. Now, the takeaway here is that avoiding massive object copying is not trivial. Some solutions exist, but they do not apply to a very wide spectrum of applications. And we wanted to think about a solution that could work on most platforms. All right, so the solution that we are proposing is to allocate objects with similar lifetime close to each other. If we do this, then we will have no fragmentation in our heap. And if you have no fragmentation, then the GC will have an easier life because it doesn't have to compact memory. Now, in order to understand what means to estimate lifetimes of objects, we are going to propose an hypothesis that will allow us to estimate these lifetimes. And our hypothesis is that objects that are located in the same allocation context are going to live approximately the same amount of time. Time here is determined in the number of garbage collection cycles that an object lives through. And an allocation context is defined as a precise location in your code, for example, a bytecode index, the method, the package, and so on of your code, coupled with how the thread got into the instruction that is allocating this code, which is the call graph state. Now, again, going back to the example that I showed you before, this means that I'm going to assume that this buffer variable or this buffer object is going to leave some time, and the next time that I allocate this object, it's going to leave approximately the same time, the same amount of time that the previous object lived. So this is what we are assuming this work. Obviously, if I call run task from a different place, this will also be accounted. Okay, so in practice, what we are proposing here is to replace the garbage collector, which is one component inside the GC, so in the bottom layer, by two new components. One is NG2C, which is a GC that we proposed 2 years ago, coupled with a runtime object lifetime profiler, and this profile will determine the lifetime of objects and will instruct NG2C to allocate these objects close to other objects with similar lifetimes. Now, in a very high overview, this profiler is going to answer a very simple question, which is how long are objects going to live if I'm allocating in this particular allocation context. This information is going to be stored inside an object lifetime distribution table, and this table is going to be used by the application execution every time you are allocating something. And then these objects are allocated in the heap and are collected by the GC, and the GC gives us feedback on how long these objects have survived. So this is kind of a feedback loop. Now, if we go one step lower and see how this actually works inside the JVM, imagine that we are executing method M at BCII. We have a new instruction, and assuming that we have a thread stack T, whenever we are allocating this object, we are going to combine the allocation site identifier and the thread stack T, and we are going to generate this allocation context, and this allocation context is going to be installed in the header of the object B that is going to be allocated. Now, in OpenJDK, you get a 64-bit header for the object if you don't use compressed OOPs. And these upper 32 bits that we are using are usually used for biased locking. But most of the times, we have seen that biased locking is not used to lock data objects, but are used to lock control objects, which are not the main purpose of this work. So we use this upper 32 bits. We do not corrupt bias locking, so if the object eventually gets bias locked, it just means that we are not going to be able to use this information for profiling. So we do not corrupt any semantics of the bias locking. So besides updating the object header, we also going to update the object lifetime distribution table to say, well, we have one more object that has not survived yet any allocation context, any GC, but it comes from this allocation context. Now, this is what happens when we are allocating objects inside the JVM. Now, when a GC kicks in, we are going to account for every object that survives one garbage collection, and we are going to give this information back to the object lifetime distribution table. So periodically, we are going to look into this table, and we are going to try to estimate lifetimes for objects that come from a particular allocation context. And if it happens that we have a distribution like this one, where we have a singular triangular distribution, this means that we have a very good idea of the lifetime of objects that are coming out of these allocation sites. However, if we have a distribution with more than one peak, for example, with two triangular distributions, it means that we probably have a conflict, and this means that we have some way of calling this allocation from different places, and these different places are using this object for different things. So, for example, method A might be allocating this object and storing it in a data store, and method B might be allocating just a temporary object just to do some computation. So, in order to differentiate these two scenarios, we use context tracking. Basically, we are going to profile method calls, so to understand that we come from different places and be able to differentiate whenever we are allocating from one place that's going to live for a long time and one place that's going to be a very temporary object. Now, context tracking is very expensive. We are only going to do it for JITED methods, and by default, we disable method call profiling for every method call unless we see that we really need this method call to disambiguate some context tracking. I'm not going to show the details of the algorithm that we propose to select the method calls to be profiled, but we can discuss it, and it's described in detail in the paper. So for implementation, we implemented this on top of OpenJDK 8, which is an industrial JVM. We combined it with NG2C, which is the GC that we proposed 2 years ago. And ROP is meant to be run in production settings, so this profiler is meant to be running always. So in order to make this happen, we have to have a lot of performance implementations, performance optimizations to cope with a lot of things that are going inside the JVM. And this has to do, for example, with how to handle inline methods or handling exceptions on stack replacements and other cool features that the JVM provides, but are very difficult to cope with when we're trying to change something. Okay, so I'm going to show you some performance numbers. We are going to compare ROP with G1, which is the current default GC in OpenJDK. I'm also going to show you NG2C. NG2C can have programmer annotations with lifetimes of objects that the programmer explicitly tells the GC. And we also have CMS, which is concurrent mark and sweep. For the big data platforms, we use Cassandra, which is a key value store. We use YCSB to generate workloads. We have Lucene, which is an in-memory indexing tool. And we have GraphSci, which is a graph processing engine. Now, in this slide, I'm showing you post-time percentiles. I'm not sure if you can actually see all the lines, but I have some numbers here. So I'm showing you these 6 plots. Each plot is for a different workload. Vertically, so the y-axis is pause times in milliseconds, and the x-axis is the percentile of the pause. I'm mostly interested in comparing G1, which is default, with ROP. And as you can see, in the longest tail latency, ROP can reduce pauses from at least 50% up to 85% in the long tail latency. One additional note is that we can really approximate when G2C, so basically it means that we can replace programmer knowledge with automatic profiling that we can generate during runtime. So this is just a different way of looking at the same results from the same experiments. So this is the pause time distribution, this is histograms, and again with the same approaches being evaluated here and the same experiments. The cool thing here is to see that ROP usually has lower numbers and numbers to the left, which means that they fall into buckets with smaller or shorter pause times. Again, we can approximate very well NG2C, which uses programmer annotations. Now, obviously, nothing comes for free. This extra profiling work that we do inside the JVM comes at a cost. Right now, ROP costs around 6% to maintain. So basically, we are introducing profiling code that will be triggered a lot. So every time you are locating an object, there is a couple of instructions that are going to be executed. And some of your method calls are going to also be profiled. And this has a cost. Right now, this cost is around 6% of throughput. For memory utilization, there is an increase in 2%. This mostly comes because since we produce less fragmentation, the GC will take more time to kick in, and this will lead to a slightly more utilization of memory over time. One interesting note is to see the performance of ZGC. ZGC is a completely concurrent GC that is being developed right now. It will provide you very, very low pause times, most of the time under 10 milliseconds, but it will produce right now a very high throughput overhead, which right now is still a very high penalty for a lot of applications. So to conclude, big data applications are still suffering from long tail latencies, but we see that we can take advantage of the hypothesis that we are proposing to get lower pause times in our application. ROP can be used to kind of mitigate or at least alleviate some of these pause times. It comes with a very moderate throughput overhead. You don't have to change the code. You don't have to involve the programmer. It's basically a drop-in replacement. You just give it a new JVM. You enable some lunchtime flags, and the profiler will kick in. And the code is available in GitHub if you want to try it out. Thank you. I'm open to questions.
Hi, good talk. You mentioned earlier on that one alternative is to use region-based memory management. And that seems to me, and I've worked in this area, seems like a natural fit to this kind of space. I didn't understand what your objection was. Is it the programming complexity? You mentioned something about escapes from databases or something. Could you speak more about why this is a better solution than using a region-based approach?
So in region-based, I usually see two types. So you can have static analysis-based, region-based, which you are going to use some static analysis tools to try to make sure that objects will never get out of this region, and therefore, whenever this region or the scope of this region is over, the GC can completely avoid everything that is inside. Again, this has a problem that, for example, if you're using a cache, the eviction of a particular cache line can be dependent of the user workload. So the compiler will never be able to tell when is this region going to be evicted. If there is also some solutions based on programmer help, but then the programmer needs to be able to tell the GC when this it is safe to delete these objects.
Sure. I think for the first one, though, I mean, what you're dealing with, if you're streaming a large amount of data through a large data system, mm-hmm. I mean, the main thing is you're getting rid of chunks for the time. Each of those steps is processing a bunch of things and throwing it away. The interior state that you might keep in a step would not be something that you'd hold in the big region. That seems like something that would be separate and more amenable to your traditional GC stuff. But anyway, we can talk more later. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Petros Maniatis, Google. I'm trying to understand how the accuracy of the lifetime of the object lifetime prediction plays into your objective, which is the length of the pause. Mm-hmm. If you had twice as good accuracy, for example, if you didn't care about the cost of instrumentation and all the context tracking, and you got as good a lifetime prediction as you could get, how would that translate into pause times? Did you try to see sort of the trade-off between the two and what's the optimal point? And I have a three quarters of a question after that as a follow-up.
It's a good point. We actually, so the thing is, as soon as we start moving objects around, distributions change completely. So we didn't make some efforts to try to see what if I provide less information, I'm still getting a lot of the benefits. So one thing that I can answer is, most of the times, just taking advantage of the allocation site and not tracking the whole call graph is most of the time is going to give you most of the benefits. So you can just completely disable method call tracking, you don't care about that, and you're still getting much lower pause times because just the allocation site is going to give you most of the information. With regards to not tracking some location sites, we haven't done that, but maybe it's a good future direction.
Can I ask a little bit more of a question? Okay. So the reason I'm asking this is I'm trying to think, if you were to do a lot more accurate tracking, mm-hmm. let's say that every time you have a string manipulation function, you copied it in your bytecode, or you did static analysis to figure out where every invocation of it is called from, maybe you get a lot more accuracy. Would the cost of having more information, even ignoring the cost of computing it, a bigger binary, having more on the instruction side of the executable, would that be worth it? I'm trying to understand what the trade-off is. I know that you picked something and you got some good results, mm-hmm. but I'm trying to understand if I care about the heap in a non-managed language, which also has similar problems based on lifetime, would it be useful there?
Well, it's a hard question. So
that's the point.
Yeah. So usually, when you have when you start moving these objects, there are several steps. So some works just do pretendering, meaning okay, I'll just push this object to the old generation and I'll wait until it dies. The thing is, if you have a very aggressive workload that pushes a lot of things to the old generation, you are still going to end up with fragmentation. What we are doing is going the next step and say, okay, we are just going not to give a binary answer, but let's say a number of the generation. So we are going to have buckets in the heap. And this actually produces a very good results. Now, if I want to have more precise information, having, for example, more buckets, is this going to be better for us? We still don't know, because most of the times it seems to be enough, at least right now, with the current workloads. Maybe with more aggressive workloads, this is not going to be enough, because these objects, so the object lifetime is counted in garbage collection cycles, and you would have to have much more GCs to make the solution not work again. So you would have to have a much more aggressive workload to make us look for more specialized. That is at least what I can see right now.
Thank you.
Okay, so before we break, can the speakers for the next session see Mike Swift right away? And so we have a 40-minute break now, and let's thank Rodrigo and all the speakers now.